Hey, it's Jody Hamilton.
And Sean Smith-Pierce.
Here's a taste of what you might have missed from the Politics Bar.
Jody, I was listening to you this morning, filling in for Steph. You and Chris were debating, and just for the record, Jody is right. Chris's argument is that there is some truth to what's being said about the left being in their own information silo. Right.
Basically, we started talking about how Gavin Newsom has invited people on his podcast, High Up MAGA Guys.
Yeah. Well-known right-wing propagandists. That's what they are. Yeah.
And my argument is he shouldn't be inviting them because nobody on that side is listening to Gavin Newsom.
Right. It doesn't help to bring propagandists into a sphere where truth matters because they're just going to lie their asses off anyway.
Right.
So here is a public service message for Chris Lavoie. Jody Hamilton is right. Catch all that and more weeknights at the Politics Bar. Available through your favorite progressive radio station, your favorite podcast player, or online anytime at thepoliticsbar.com.
MSW Media.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein. This is Spy Talk. It's been a mind-bending week for those of us who have followed the ins and outs of the intelligence agencies for decades. There's just no other way to say it, considering Trump's provocative picks to run the Office of National Intelligence and the CIA, for starters. Just as we began to record this podcast on Thursday, we learned that Matt Gaetz had withdrawn his name for consideration as Attorney General of the United States, presumably because of the mounting revulsion over his twisted personal life. Thank God for small favors, as the Justice Department has immense power over intelligence activities, not just crime. Now we're waiting with bated breath for a Gaetz replacement to be named and Trump's pick for FBI director, both of whom, of course, will have direct responsibility in the president-elect's repeated determination to arrest and prosecute his political enemies. Here to discuss all that with me today is Tim Weiner, who I'm sure many of you know is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter who has written several groundbreaking histories of the CIA, the FBI, the Pentagon's black budget, the Nixon administration, and the long clandestine rivalry between the U.S. and Russia. He has a new book, The Mission, The CIA in the 21st Century, coming out next summer. Tim Weiner, welcome to Spy Talk.
Thank you, Jeff. It's great to be with you.
We've known each other a long time. I followed your work very closely over the decades now. And you've written groundbreaking histories on the FBI and the CIA and the Nixon administration and so on and so forth. And I wonder offhand what you make of the current constellation of Trump appointees to the major national security organs of the government.
It is mind-boggling. You have a conspiracy theorist, a friend of dictators, Putin in particular, and a genuine oddball in Tulsi Gabbard, nominated for Director of National Intelligence, overseeing all American intelligence services, including the CIA. And for CIA, you have John Ratcliffe, who occupied the Director of National Intelligence office for 8 months back in 2020, and whose conduct in office provoked the following tweet from General Michael Hayden, the former Director of CIA and the National Security Agency. Taking a look at what John Ratcliffe was doing at the DNI, General Hayden tweeted, "The head of the intelligence community should be hands-off politics. This is reprehensible. Vote for Trump and you'll get more of it. We will be just like China or Russia, a tin pot dictatorship." That was back in October 2020. And here we are 4 years later.
It seems to me it's unprecedented, to say the least, to put security risks at the top of the national security organs of the government. Is there anything that you can think of that even approaches it? You wrote to me earlier today when I asked you before we went on the air, so to speak, whether James Schlesinger might be somewhat of a precedent when he was appointed by Nixon to police the CIA, kind of.
Well, Schlesinger had some experience. He was Nixon's budget director. That is experience on how the executive branch works. But the thing about Schlesinger is Nixon sent him in there as Trump is sending Ratcliffe to clean out the CIA root and branch. He arrived for what was a very short tenure, about 4 months in 73, and he told everybody on the seventh floor, where the directorates of CIA have offices, I'm here to make sure you don't screw Richard Nixon.
Hmm. And what practical effect did that have?
About 2,000 people lost their jobs. When Trump first nominated Ratcliffe to run the Director of National Intelligence, Trump said, and I quote, "We need somebody that's strong and can really rein it in. The intelligence agencies have run amok."
Hmm.
And, you know, when in office, what did Ratcliffe do to provoke that strong statement from General Hayden? Well, he and his principal deputy, Ash Patel, a name probably rings a bell with you and your listeners.
Yeah.
Set out to ransack Russia House at the CIA, the people that run operations against Russia. And they spent months trying to rifle through top secret files for anything that might fulfill Trump's desire to deny that he was Putin's chosen candidate, and to support Trump's attack on the CIA as the capital of the deep state. Pardon me. That the switching board for the great deep state conspiracy. And throughout the summer and fall of 2020, Ratcliffe kept looking for fragments of raw intelligence to score political points for the president's re-election. Well, this was a futile wild goose chase.
I'm also thinking of the short reign of Porter Goss, the Florida congressman who had been chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, a Republican, and George W. Bush appointed him CIA director, and he made a fatal mistake of importing his congressional staff, who were kind of wild in the eyes, similar deep state interrogators, and it caused an uproar on the seventh floor.
Yes, in the summer of 2004, President George W. Bush sent Porter Goss, who had been a CIA officer back in the 60s and early 70s, and had been the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee for 7 years. So not a neophyte. President George W. Bush sent Porter Goss over to CIA with a demand to clean house and stop the leaks, the damn leaks. Well, what was being leaked? What was being leaked was a fact that was obvious to pretty much anybody in the United States government outside of four-star generals and the president of the United States, which was that the occupation of Iraq was going rather badly, very badly, in fact. So Porter Goss comes in, he brings his highly political and partisan staff from the House Intelligence Committee over. They are inevitably known as the Gosslings, although some later called them the Hitler Youth. And they demanded loyalty. They brought in to be the executive director the chief operating officer, the number three person in the CIA, a career criminal named Dusty Fargo, Powell Dustin Fargo.
Unforgettable.
And when the chief of the clandestine service and the deputy chief of the clandestine service and the counterintelligence chief objected to Dusty Fargo, who had a number of screaming red flags in his, they were fired, or they were forced to quit, depending on your point of view. And Goss did clean house, although probably not in a methodical way. His 19-month tenure at CIA was remembered by Mike Morrell, the former deputy chief and acting chief of CIA, in his memoir as the worst 19 months of his 30-plus years at the CIA. It was a disaster.
I remember a CIA officer at that time telling me that he was a very garrulous, Dusty Fargo was a very garrulous and friendly kind of guy. He said, but when you shook hands with him, he wanted to check to see if you still had your watch.
Well, Dusty Fargo eventually went to prison for taking kickbacks on classified contracts. And when Goss resigned and Mike Hayden came in 2006, there was crime scene tape, yellow tape surrounding his office on the seventh floor. Right. And that's what greeted Mike Hayden upon his arrival at the CIA in 2006. I mean, the CIA is supposed to be above politics. Am I right or am I wrong?
Well, it's supposed to be. It's inevitably infected by politics of, you know, who might be in the White House at the time and the staff, like it was under George W. Bush with the WMD finding on Iraq, which was, you know, wrong. So it does bend to political winds, but I take your point, and we agree that it strives to be, at least the rank and file, strives to be above politics and get on with the job no matter who's in the White House.
What is the one thing that Trump demands of all his appointees?
Loyalty.
Loyalty. I have talked to a number of ranking agency veterans, a couple of former directors, some high-ranking clandestine service officers. And their chief worry right now is that Trump and Radcliffe are going to ask not only for loyalty from the director and his deputy, but of the next echelon of the CIA leaders, demand that they sign a loyalty oath. And I'm talking about the next head of the clandestine service, the next chief of intelligence analysis, chiefs of operations for Russia, the Middle East, Iran, China. That will be a disaster.
Do you mean literally a loyalty oath, a piece of paper?
Well, you know, back during the 1950s in the Red Scare, there was an actual written loyalty oath government employees had to sign. Trump, you know, keeping in his past pattern of practice as a career criminal, would want nothing on paper, of course. But, you know, he straight up, he looked Jim Comey in the eye over dinner with Shrimp Stampy at the White House in 2017. And said, I want loyalty. And Comey famously thought to himself, and later reported this thought, I felt like I was talking with Sammy the Bull Gravano. You know, like a code of loyalty and of omerta. The mafia code of silence.
Yeah. Speaking of, let's talk about the FBI a little bit, because you wrote a groundbreaking book on the FBI as well. How do you think that the rank and file special agents would react to we haven't yet heard about a Trump appointee to the FBI, but considering what we've seen so far, it's not going to be good. It's going to be, someone's going to be put in there to wreck the FBI. Anything is possible. Or to use the FBI to go after his political enemies. He's been very explicit about what he wants the Justice Department and the FBI to do. We knew that there was a pocket of pro-Trump sentiment in New York. previously that flushed out the investigation into Hillary's emails that doomed her chances of being elected. How do you expect the rank and file of today to react to orders to go after political enemies?
You know, the FBI has two functions, and one is finding and arresting criminals, and the other is as an intelligence, and it has always been an intelligence service. You know, and J. Edgar Hoover, who led it for 48 years until his death in 1972, used it as an instrument of political repression.
The Black Panthers, Socialist Workers Party, break-ins, wiretapping, and more.
Yes. Warrantless wiretapping, black bag jobs, poison pen letters to people like Martin Luther King. Could we see something like that in the future? Well, one potential nominee is the aforementioned Klaus Patel, who is 100% signed up for the MAGA program. He was an aide on the House Intelligence Committee who was assigned to basically dig up anything that could refute the intelligence community's analysis that Russia was working for Trump's election and re-election, and who has personally vowed to arrest and jail Trump's political enemy. Makes no bones about it. So if you saw Cash Patel in charge of the FBI, you can be sure that it will be used as an instrument of political repression. Would FBI agents go along with this? I hope not.
But they did, under Hoover, conduct all these illegal operations.
J. Edgar Hoover's FBI is dead and buried. But the potential, to quote Dwight Eisenhower in another context, the potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists. It is real.
The disastrous rise of misplaced power. That is the seed of evil in the government that could be wielded against Trump enemies. Then again, let's look at the Watergate burglars, which you've also written about under the Nixon administration. There was resistance at the FBI to carry out break-ins and so on, and as well at CIA when Nixon tried to manipulate the CIA into supporting the Watergate burglars. So we could also imagine, let's put it that way, the Trump team using extra legal means to go after its enemies. But then again, if you want them prosecuted, you eventually have to come into court and such means would be exposed. But anyway, I'm wandering there. What do you think?
The origins of the Watergate break-in lie in J. Edgar Hoover's refusal to go along with a plan. It was known as the Houston Plan after the White House aide who devised it, but to weaponize the FBI and the CIA and the NSA to go against the enemy within, the political left. Hoover wouldn't put his name on that document. That was 1970. Hoover was 75 years old. And he figured if they got caught doing this, it would destroy his reputation and the FBI along with it. So Nixon set up his own little bucket shop of burglars and dirty trick artists, and they were known as the plumbers, and those were the guys that got caught, all retired CIA officers and agents and FBI agents in the plumbers crew who got caught. Now, the Supreme Court has ruled that Donald Trump and future presidents cannot be prosecuted for crimes committed in the exercise of presidential power. This opens the potential for the disastrous misuse of the FBI and the CIA Let it not be forgotten that under Presidents Johnson and Nixon, both those presidents ordered the CIA to go after the enemy within, which was the anti-war left in this country. Do you suppose for a minute that Donald Trump does not share the desire to go after the enemy within?
You bring up a really interesting point. There were some 22 or 23 Nixon administration officials who went to jail because of their involvement in these illegal acts. And now, if any of these nominees or soon-to-be nominees have any sense of history or worry about their culpability in illegal actions, all they have to do is look at that Supreme Court decision and say, you know what, I don't have to worry about going to jail. One, a Trump Justice Department would most likely not prosecute them. And if they were prosecuted, the Trump White House could argue that these were in furtherance of presidential directives and therefore immune to prosecution. Is that the bottom line? Seems like it to me.
Well, history shows that the CIA can serve as a political secret weapon wielded by a president who thinks he is above the law. President Johnson did it. President Nixon did it. Trump could command the CIA to undermine democratically elected foreign leaders he doesn't like and support right-wing regimes that he does like. Presidents from Eisenhower on through to Reagan did that during the Cold War. This is, you know, informed speculation on my part. But there are greater dangers for American intelligence, apart from the American people, in the abuse of power by the next Trump administration. For example, if you have Tulsi Gabbard, who inexplicably sided with Vladimir Putin, as Trump does, on the invasion of Ukraine, saying that President Biden and NATO had provoked Putin to invade Ukraine, who famously made a secret trip to break bread with Syria's President Assad, murderous dictator, who has taken a number of, shall we say, iconoclastic positions on things like pardoning Edward Snowden, pardoning Julian Assange, who pleaded guilty to espionage, let us say, for example, that you are the head of British intelligence, or German intelligence, or Ukrainian intelligence, or any of the NATO allied foreign intelligence services. Would you share secrets with Tulsi Gabbard or John Ratcliffe, who are nakedly political animals? I mean, the CIA depends to an enormous extent on its liaisons with foreign intelligence services. Will they dare to share intelligence with the United States in a second Trump administration? I doubt it.
We exist in such a surreal situation right now. There are a lot of synonyms I guess I could apply, but we are in such a surreal, almost novelistic kind of world right now that it's not outside the possibility. And again, it sounds like the plot of a ridiculous thriller that a Tulsi Gabbard could even share secrets with the Kremlin about U.S. operations against Russia. I mean, that sounds totally beyond the pale and conspiratorial on my part, but it is what it is, what we're looking at. You know, a friend of Putin's running national intelligence I mean, what else can you think?
The future prospect of the CIA, an agency that I've been reporting on, writing about, thinking about for nearly 40 years under Trump 2.0 is terrifying. There are a number of emergent threats in this world that the CIA is arrayed against quite spectacularly, beginning after the Russian attack on the 2016 election. The CIA mobilized to revive its powers of espionage against Russia. And the end result of that, 4 years later, was obtaining Putin's war plans for Ukraine. Intelligence support for Ukraine has helped them survive since the Russian invasion, going on now nearly 3 years ago. It is far within the realm of reason to anticipate that Trump will cut off intelligence support to Ukraine, will cut off military support to Ukraine, that Ukraine will be compelled to undergo either a fracturing of the country, that democracy there will die. And if Putin takes Ukraine, do you think he will stop there?
No. Certainly the Baltic nations and close-in former Soviet republics, Moldova and so on, and Georgia, are terrified at the prospect of capitulation to Putin.
Now, you know, one of the things that John Ratcliffe did when he was director of national intelligence was to refuse to release the intelligence community's traditional annual threat assessment, which had for 3 years before surveyed Putin's attacks on the United States and Western democracy. He cut off the supply, the flow of classified information to Democrats on the intelligence committee, and his own directorate, the director of national intelligence, told Congress at the end of his short 8-month reign in 2020 that he had delayed, distorted, and obstructed reporting on Russia's election interference. Do you think that realistic threat reporting on Russia will continue to survive, that Gabbard or Ratcliffe would brief the president on Russian intelligence threats to the United States and its allies, or that the aggression of Russia and its intelligence services will now increase mightily, given the fact that they believe that they have an ally in the White House, not to mention American intelligence?
It's certainly something to be apprehensive about. And as you were speaking, it occurred to me that this underscores the situation, this evolving situation, underscores the importance of the press. Because a lot of these abuses we heard about because of leaks.
Well, not just leaks, Jeff, reporting. Not all reportage is leaks.
Fairly said, yeah. Deep dives, investigative reporting is going to be more important than ever. Of course, we now face the specter of Trump attacking the press, which he's also been very explicit about.
Well, you and I labored as ink-stained wretches for many years at American newspapers and wire services. And we like to believe that reporters constitute the membership of the Fourth Estate. What you will see, I believe, in the next Trump administration is a continued attack on the deep state, this imaginary cabal of soldiers and spies and unelected bureaucrats who secretly run the American government, and the press. He will take aim at the imaginary deep state and weaken the state that exists, the federal government of the United States and its national security agencies. And that will constitute an existential to American democracy and the interests of American citizens.
I guess we can only hope that the tens of millions of people who voted for Trump out of economic or other reasons will wake up and see that this is not what they expected, and that
well,
Trump.
What did they expect, Jeff? You know, I don't think that a plurality of Trump voters, 70 million odd who voted for him, read a newspaper or listen to anything except the right-wing echo chamber of Fox News and its acolytes. Trump has appointed a, you know, now that Matt Gaetz is gone, it's down one, but a Fox News cabinet. He had set the nominee for Secretary of Defense. Gabbard, a Fox News favorite. Radcliffe, a Fox News favorite. And the list is long. If we are focusing on American intelligence as a vital instrument of American national security, we are facing a world of trouble, a world of danger, and an information bubble. I mean, what is the highest function of American intelligence? It's to tell the president what is going on in the world and to warn of future threats. If you have political partisans running the CIA and indeed the FBI and the rest of the three-letter agencies, you are going to have an echo chamber within the White House. These people are ideologues, and ideology is the enemy of intelligence. If you're an ideologue, you don't need information. Your mind is made up. You don't want to be confused with facts. This is a clear and present danger to the national security of the United States.
Ideologues and cranks, I would say. I've been one of those reluctant to throw around the word fascist applying to these guys. But I must say, given the value, the shock value of these appointments, they seem to be following, whether consciously or not, the fascist playbook. When we look at what Mussolini did and Hitler did other strong men in Brazil and Hungary and so on, lesser ogres. This is a playbook of how to demoralize the opposition, to shock the opposition into obeisance or apathy. And I can only see unprecedented vast troubles ahead. This is not a Reagan who alarmed liberals, a Bush who alarmed liberals. This is of an entirely different magnitude. This is the weaponization, to coin a phrase, of the intelligence community against Americans' national interest.
Ever since World War I, Jeff, it has been the highest goal of the United States to make the world safe for democracy. And when, from World War II onward, up through the end of the Cold War and into the early 21st century, the number of democracies in the world rose and rose and rose until in 2001, the number of democracies and the number of autocracies in the world was roughly equal. That had never happened before in the history of civilization. What has happened since is that the number of democracies in the world flatlined during the first George W. Bush administration and then began to decline, making the world safe for democracy at gunpoint in the Middle East didn't work out too well. And ever since 2006, the world has been in a democratic recession. The number of democracies has declined. America's ability to inspire the people of the world as a beacon of democracy and freedom has diminished and dwindled. And now I think it is not too much to say that America itself is a failing democracy, that we are among the nations in a democratic recession. We had a really good run. It's been 248 years as a liberal democracy, as a free republic. But it is worth noting that only one free republic in the history of civilization has ever lasted longer than 300 years, and that was the Roman Empire. It is a clear and present danger to have Trump back in office, to have these nominees poised to take over American intelligence. And we can only hope, you know, soldiers and spies swear allegiance to the Constitution, not to the president. And resignation and protest is a rare thing in American government. But if military generals are ordered to round up not only migrants, but enemies of the state, I have faith that they will throw down their stars and refuse to obey the legal orders. I have faith that there will be resistance, if that's not perhaps the proper word, but that people in CIA and FBI will resist illegal orders, even if the president is immunized from being prosecuted for those orders, and that there will be a strong, but possibly not strong enough, rebellion against the misuse of the powers of foreign and domestic intelligence in this country. I believe that. I've been wrong before.
Well, on that faint positive note, we have to wrap it up. Thanks so much, Tim Weiner, for
coming on the show
and sharing your important views with us. We appreciate it.
And that's it for this week's Spy Talk. Thanks for listening. You can find lots more interesting conversations like this one in our archives, available at our home at the MSW Network or on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, mosey on over to our Spy Talk newsletter on Substack, where my colleagues and I offer fresh reporting and analyses from the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. Just Google Spy Talk and you'll find your way there. This week's Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai and expertly edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. That's it. I'm Jeff Stein. See you around.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to SpyTalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter at @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MSW Media.
Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance or don't understand the differences between insurance plans or have surprise medical bills, out-of-control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in-depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today.